This morning comes from WPLN listener members and from Harding Academy, offering 21 team sports and experienced dedicated teachers who work to help young minds grow. Admissions of information online at hardingacademy.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Big day for you all. You all get your Kevin Bacon number down to one. Just one degree of separation between you and him once you listen to this week's show. Not to mention your Lisa Kudrow number, your Paul Rubens number, and you will have, no exaggeration, one degree of separation from Xena the Warrior Princess. It's a celebration of celebrity this week. Plus, Carl Castle responds to the people who still miss him on the early morning newscasts.
I so won't be there for you.
It's kind of cold, but that's how he is. We'll be back with you with our show right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Fighting is reported in neighborhoods across the Libyan capital, Tripoli, as rebel fighters advance on the city from the east, west, and south. The BBC's Rupert Winfield Hayes has been moving toward the capital with rebel forces advancing from the west.
In the burning summer sun, hundreds of rebel soldiers chant as they march down the road to Tripoli this morning. Spirits are high. Many say they believe Tripoli can be reached by nightfall. An hour later, there is wild jubilation as the rebels advance through the small town of Maya, just 30 kilometers from the center of Tripoli. But just a few hundred meters further on, we come under intense fire. The rebels are pinned down, and then they turn and run, their pickup trucks tearing back down the road we've just come down. This afternoon, the rebel advance on Tripoli has been halted as they wait for NATO aircraft to hit the pro-Gaddafi positions and to try and reopen the way to the capital.
The BBC's Rupert Winfield Hayes reporting from just west of Tripoli. An ongoing investigation of election fraud in Afghanistan is resulting in a political shakeup. NPR's Ahmed Shafi reports local election officials say 9 members of parliament will be kicked out of their posts because of alleged fraud.
The 9 are among 62 cases of alleged fraud highlighted by a special court appointed by Afghan President Hamid Karzai. But critics dismissed the special court as being unconstitutional. Karzai also came under pressure from the international community amid suspicions that he was trying to bring his supporters into the parliament. A few weeks ago, Karzai released a decree ordering Afghanistan's Independent Election Commission to make a final decision. It also, in effect, cancelled the ruling of this special court. Since then, there have been a string of angry demonstrations on the streets of Kabul by affected politicians and their supporters. Analysts say the Afghan Elections Commission's ruling today could provoke fresh protests. Ahmad Shafi, NPR News, Kabul.
The lawyer for 2 American men being held in Iran on spy charges says he will fight to overturn his client's prison sentence. Yesterday, Iranian state television reported that a court ordered Josh Fatal and Shane Bauer to serve 8 years behind bars. They've been in jail since their arrest over 2 years ago while hiking along the Iran-Iraq border. They were charged with illegal entry and espionage. A third companion, Sarah Short, was released from prison last year on $500,000 bail. 1.5 million young Roman Catholics from 193 countries are united in a spiritual gathering in Spain led by Pope Benedict XVI. The Pope was speaking in Spanish to pilgrims as he led Mass today in an aerodrome in Madrid. This is NPR News. It's the 20th anniversary of Estonia's independence from the Soviet Union, but Terry Schultz explains from Tallinn why it's been officially declared Iceland Day in this Baltic state.
Estonia declared independence August 20, 1991, with Soviet tanks circling its capital, Moscow's attempt to intimidate the country of just 1.5 million people. Tallinn waited anxiously for international recognition of its sovereignty. The U.S. hesitated until September 2nd. Iceland recognized Estonia the next day. August 21st is now Iceland Day here. At a celebration, Iceland's President Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson took the stage at midnight to accept the honor and reminisce a bit.
With deep emotions, We come to pay homage to Estonia. Our heads bowed in respect for the struggle, paved with sacrifices.
Estonia continues its independence celebration, including exhibitions of Icelandic art, music, and dance. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Tallinn.
President Obama tells CBS that his low approval rating reflects general public discontent with Congress. In an interview broadcast today, the president, who is vacationing at Martha's Vineyard, says that even though his policies have helped keep the economy from getting worse, that argument may not resonate with the millions of people still looking for work. Recent public opinion polls have shown Mr. Obama's approval rating hovering around 40%. John Huntsman is offering what he calls a sensible middle ground to a country he believes is politically center-right. The Republican presidential candidate says his GOP rivals and President Obama, meanwhile, are on the political fringes of the issues that matter most to the people. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, sponsor of the Ice House Entrepreneurship Program. Learn more at kauffman.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody. It's August, and that means it's a great time to relax and hang out with some old friends and see what they've been up to.
What Peter is trying to say is that we're taking the week off, and the old friends are some of our favorite TV and movie stars who've joined us to play Not My Job. So in general, what they're up to now is exactly what they were doing when we recorded the interview.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
We'll begin with actor Kevin Bacon, who joined us in June of 2011 with panelists Amy Dickinson, Paula Poundstone, and Alonzo Bowden.
Kevin's movie X-Men First Class had just come out, so I asked him, with all the movies he does, how in the world he even had time to appear in our show.
Yeah, it's just a lifelong dream of mine.
I understand. So you got another big comic book movie bandwagon, which is totally cool. Did you get that stuff that, like, everybody else has gotten, from Michael Keaton in Batman to Tobey Maguire, with all the fans going, that's not him! What a terrible idea to cast that guy!
Yeah, well, there's, you know, you have to be careful what you look at online, because there was plenty of that. If you actually look at the way my character is drawn in the comic books, he is a gigantic, behemoth, muscle-bound man with a long black ponytail that dresses like Benjamin Franklin. And it just wasn't really the way we wanted to go visually with it. Plus, I just... You know,
it's funny, because that actually describes me, and I don't know why. We need to ask you, of course, about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game. This,
okay.
If I'm not mistaken, this was developed as like a college thing in the 80s. Somebody realized that you've done so many movies that you can take pretty much any actor who's ever lived and connect him to you in 6 steps or less.
That's right. These four guys were sitting around their college dorm in Albright College, and one of my movies was on TV, and they kind of came up with this concept. And I think it was kind of at the beginning of when things were sort of being spread exponentially on the internet, and you know, people started coming up to me and saying, you know, my cousin invented a game about you, or I'm so hungover because I was playing your game last night. And, you know, I didn't really know what it was.
Did you like it? Were you flattered?
No, I was horrified.
Why were you horrified?
Well, because I really thought it was a joke at my expense. I mean, I thought they were saying, can you believe that this lightweight can be connected in 6 degrees to Lawrence?
Wow.
And then I went onto a television show, and I met these young guys, and they really, you know, they were real fans. I mean, they weren't, it wasn't something that they had devised to, you know, bring my career down. and so then I just kind of said, well, I guess I gotta, I've got to embrace it.
Absolutely. And you have, we, it has been computerized. There's a website called the Kevin Bacon Oracle, and we went there because we have nothing better to do. And we found out, this is very cool, you are 3 degrees from Benito Mussolini. Did you know that? He was in this movie called The Eternal City with Joan Bennett, who was in House of Dark Shadows with Dennis Patrick, who was in The Air Up There with Kevin Bacon.
That's amazing.
This is like, through the focus of this game, you become the seminal figure of the 20th and 21st centuries. I do not think this is a bad thing.
I don't know about that.
Nah. We read, I wanted to ask you about this, that you once, maybe as an experiment or just because you were tired of it, you actually invested money in a disguise so you could go out and not be recognized?
I did, yeah. I had it made by a special effects makeup artist.
And what was it, this disguise?
I can't say, but I don't want to say what it was because, you know, what if I want to use it again?
You might use it again.
Right. I can tell you that it was pretty subtle, but it was incredibly effective. I went out and experimented with it, went through a very, very big, popular outdoor shopping mall in Southern California, and honestly, it was awful.
Really? Because it must have been so weird for you to be wandering about.
It was weird and not in a good way.
Why? Why was it not?
Because people weren't nice to me.
Welcome to our world, Kevin Bacon.
There you go.
Really? Did you really have that? It's like, why aren't I being allowed to cut to the front of this line? Why are they not giving me free appetizers? I don't understand this. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, you hear from, and Barack Obama is one of many people to say this, like, oh, I really miss, I can't just walk down the street anymore, I'm not anonymous anymore. And you're like...
Yeah, I mean, look, there is a part of me that misses that, but would I trade it for all the great things that I've had, you know, with this lucky life? No, not in a second.
So you meant, we had our new intern, Amy, go over your filmography and prepare for this interview, and she had one question that she really wanted us to ask you. It's my pleasure to do this for her. You made this movie called Where the Truth Lies.
Yes.
And in this movie, you have a threesome with Colin Firth and Rachel Blanchard.
Yeah.
So Amy would like to know, so what's Colin Firth like intimately?
In bed?
That was the question.
That's great. I mean, he'll be so happy to hear that was the question. When you have those kinds of scenes with people,
yeah,
sometimes it can be kind of horrifying, and sometimes you can really form a lifelong bond. And that's
really? So does, like, Colin still text you in the middle of the night?
What? I have.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I saw him recently in London, and I was coming from, you know, the X-Men premiere, and I had all this swag, you know, T-shirts and hats and you know, DVDs and little toys and stuff like that, and I brought it over to his house to give his two sons, and because they were fans of the movies and stuff like that, and I handed them each a bag, and I just couldn't resist whispering to them, I bet you didn't get any of this stuff from King's Speech.
Kevin Bacon, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
6 degrees Schmick's Degrees.
So, yeah, we've talked about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game. You can take any movie star, connect him eventually to you. But that's movies. We decided to ask you about 3 cases of different kinds of unexpected connections.
Okay.
Answer 2 of these questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. Carl, who is actor Kevin Bacon playing for?
Kevin is playing for Connor Griffin of Seattle.
All right, here is your first question. Hedy Lamarr, as you know, movie star in the 30s and 40s, probably most famous for playing Delilah, Samson and Delilah. But without her, we may not have had what? A, skorts, or the combination of skirts and shorts that women sometimes wear. B, cellular phones, or C, the political career of Al Franken.
What was the first one?
The first one was skorts. Those are those skirts that are like shorts, or shorts that are like skirts.
Oh, well, I didn't know what that was. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's so out there that I'm going to say Al Franken.
Who knows what caused the political career of Al Franken? But as far as we know, it wasn't Hedy Lamarr. Hedy Lamarr contributed significantly, though, to cell phones.
How?
Because in addition to being a gorgeous and successful movie star, much like our guest, she was an accomplished mathematician and patented a method for encoding broadcasts called frequency hopping that is used in cell phone and Wi-Fi technology. Really? Wow. All right, you still have two more chances. Next, we're going to ask you about the ventriloquist Paul Winchell. You may remember his classic characters, Jerry Mahoney, Knucklehead Smith, or his work as the voice of Tigger in all those Winnie the Pooh movies. You know.
Yeah.
But did you know about Paul Winchell that A, he discovered the young Arnold Schwarzenegger in Austria, B, he invented the artificial heart, or C, he was the inspiration for Chewbacca?
Whoa.
Oh, man. Discovered Schwarzenegger in Austria?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go with that.
You're going to go with discovered Arnold Schwarzenegger, the theory being that there's Arnold Schwarzenegger lifting weights. Up comes a ventriloquist and says, you. You, sir, are going to be a movie star and the governor of California. Mark my words.
Are you giving me a chance to change my mind?
I am.
Okay. Then I would say that was a dumb idea. Now that I think about it, I got to say I'm leaning to the artificial heart.
I think you're right, yes. Paul Winchell was a ventriloquist and an inventor, and he invented and patented the first artificial heart. In fact, another weird connection, his partner in this project, Dr. Henry Heimlich, inventor of the Heimlich maneuver.
Wow.
All right. Last question. Here we go.
All right.
We're talking about Roger Ailes now. He is, of course, the powerful chairman of Fox News, and he has spent his life working in TV and consulting with Republican candidates. But he had a brief intermission from both of those in his career in the early 70s, in which he did what? A, he produced a Broadway musical on environmental themes called Mother Earth. B, he opened a health center in L.A. called What Ails You? Or C, he created a disco dance that he called the Jolly Roger.
What ails you?
His name being Roger Ailes. It was a...
No, that's too lame.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Mother Earth.
You're right. It was a Broadway show called Mother Earth, very early 70s. The music was by Tony Tennille of Captain and Tennille fame. He then went on to become a successful Broadway producer after that, before going back to politics.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew? I didn't know.
We could use a new musical about the environment, frankly.
Maybe it's time for the Mother Earth revival.
There you go.
Carl, how did Kevin Bacon do in our quiz?
Well, Kevin had two correct answers, and that's enough to win for Connor Griffin.
All right.
Well done, sir. Pretty good. That was pretty good.
That was fun.
How does this feel compared to the other accomplishments in your life?
This is definitely one of them.
There you are. Yeah. Kevin Bacon is a world-famous movie star, has been so for many years. You can see him now in the movie X-Men First Class. Kevin Bacon, what a delight to talk to you. Thank you for those movies.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up, remember that Friends episode, the one with Pee Wee Herman? Neither do we. But we have interviews with Lisa Kudrow and Paul Rubens, one right after the other, almost as good. Support for NPR comes from Turner Classic Movies, with Summer Under the Stars, dedicating each day in August to a Hollywood actor like Joan Crawford. TCM.com. The National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. And a Lumber Liquidator, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. We will be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Europe in trouble. We'll look at the continent's financial peril and its potential spillover. Plus, President Obama and the politics of race in America. Harvard Law professor Randall Kennedy joins us. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
Joel Bakken painted a disturbing portrait of big business in his nonfiction hit, The Corporation. His new book is called Childhood Under Siege, How Big Business Targets Children. Joel Bakken on Cue the Summer with guest host Terry O'Reilly from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock. You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Showers and thunderstorms are likely this morning, and then mostly cloudy skies with a high near 90 degrees. Right now it's 82 degrees in Nashville at 11:20.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Right now, even as you listen to this, we are off on a show retreat, brainstorming 12 to 14 hours a day on how to make our show better.
How about the listener sonnet challenge?
Sure, Carl, we'll put that on the table. In the meantime, we're revisiting some of our favorite interviews with TV and movie stars of the past year. Here is Lisa Kudrow, a very smart actress who became famous playing the not-very-smart Phoebe on the sitcom Friends.
When she joined us, along with the panelists Roy Blunt Jr., Roxanne Roberts, and Brian Babylon, we asked her if fans of the show ever expected her to actually be like Phoebe.
They did. I mean, they especially expected me to be really nice.
Really? And you showed them how useless that was. Were you intentionally cruel to them just to see their looks of surprise and horror?
No. But I just always felt like, oh, you're going to be so disappointed.
If I'm not mistaken, the first thing you did after Friends, and correct me if I'm wrong, was this great show on HBO called The Comeback.
Right.
In which you played an actress who had been on an extremely successful sitcom.
On a somewhat successful sitcom.
Oh, excuse me. And so and your character had been in the sitcom and was now trying to make a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the only way to do that was to be on a reality show, which, mm-hmm. you know, we thought was really humiliating.
Well, what's amazing about this show, and also some other things that you've done, is how far you are willing to go to look bad to get a laugh. Which I admire tremendously about you.
Yeah, well, you know, also at the time, that was only season 2 of Amazing Race, and there were no housewives desperate to be on a reality show.
I see.
At the time. So I think now people see it a little differently. It's a lot easier to take.
Yeah. So tell us about the show you're executive producing. It's called Who Do You Think You Are?
Right.
This is very different for you because it's actually a documentary. It's not a fake documentary. It's a real one.
It's a documentary series.
And the theme of it is the ancestry of well-known people.
Right. This show has been on the BBC. They're in their 9th season now. So I was over there and I happened to see an episode and thought it was the most riveting thing I'd ever seen and could not understand why we hadn't had it in the U.S. And found out that for the most part, I think because most networks thought American audiences wouldn't be interested in that, it was too informative.
Then you're doing this other show, which is currently on the internet, called Web Therapy.
Right.
In which you play the world's worst therapist.
Yeah, ever.
You are really terrifyingly good at playing this really bad therapist.
Yeah. I know.
Oh. And how does that make you feel, playing a terrible therapist? I'm assuming you either must have some experience with therapy or you're really mad at them.
No, I think therapy is really useful. I was just, agents kept saying, what about a web therapy?
Sorry. Yes. An important distinction.
Just came out like that.
No, that's an important. It's like, I think they're in different phyla. Go on. Not people, agents. What were agents saying to you?
You should think about doing a web series. And I thought, well, you know, it would be the worst idea in the world would be therapy for 3 minutes at a time. And then what kind of horrifying person would try to do that?
I got to ask you one thing. We read that you started off studying biology, right? You were trying to follow in your father's footsteps?
Yes, that's right.
And according to Wikipedia, which of course knows all things, as a biologist, you had a special talent for castrating rats. True or false?
True.
Really? I thought you were about to berate me for relying on Wikipedia for gossip. You were good at castrating rats?
Yeah, I got really good. It was one of my, like, junior or senior year projects.
Yeah.
I won't go into what the study was, but it was a good one. So, but I had to castrate. I had to castrate young male rats, and I got it down to, I could do it in like 4 minutes.
I can't believe they didn't work this into an episode of Friends.
Yeah.
All right, since we did so well with that Wikipedia factoid, which frankly we did not believe, we're going to try Wikipedia factoid about Lisa Kudrow number two. You are a pool shark.
I was.
You were?
Well, sort of. My father taught me some really good trick shots.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So if you couldn't, if the acting thing hadn't worked out, you would have been a rat castrating pool shark.
A lot of money in that.
Oh, you bet. Yeah. Well, Lisa Kudrow, we are delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling
I So Won't Be There For You.
So you were on a show called Friends, this we know, so we decided to ask you about, naturally, enemies. Answer 2 out of 3 questions correctly, you'll win our prize. One of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine.
Ooh.
Carl, who is Lisa Kudrow playing for?
Lisa is playing for Laurie Hanshew of Nashville, Tennessee.
All right. So we're going to start with show business. 1930s movie stars Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine are sisters. They have had a legendary feud going back more than 60 years, which began when what happened? A, they both were nominated for the same Academy Award. B, they had an argument over who got out first of the same limo, or C, a billboard with Joan's face went up on Sunset Drive blocking one of Olivia's.
Ooh. I'll say C.
You're going to go for C? The billboard went up on Sunset Boulevard, I should say, in front of Olivia's?
Oh. Yeah.
Those vanity boards?
I think that's it.
It actually, believe it or not, was the Oscars. They both were up for Best Actress. Joan won. Olivia refused to congratulate her, and they've hardly spoken for 16 years. For 60 years.
Wow.
And they're both still with us, and as far as we know, they're both still mad. All right. Still 2 more chances here. Now, going back further, we're now back to the days of the Byzantine Empire, the 6th century.
Oh, good.
It was... Oh, yes. Because when she wasn't castrating rats and playing pool, she was studying Byzantine Empire. Here we go. It was nearly destroyed by a violent rivalry between two groups known as the Blues and the Greens. What was the original cause of their dispute? A, the style of their togas. B, they rooted for opposite sides in the chariot races. Or C, the Blues thought the world was round. The Greens insisted it was a cube.
That last one's funny.
Yes.
What's the second one again?
They rooted for opposite sides in the chariot races. Big deal back there in Byzantium.
Yeah, I'll say that one.
You're right. It was the chariot race thing. They rooted for different teams. And they had big riots. In fact, they almost destroyed the Capitol. Imagine like a huge riot between Bears fans and Packers fans.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you'd get. All right, this is exciting. You have one more here, and if you get this right, you win.
Okay.
Now we're going into the comic books now. We're going to talk about Batman. He's had many enemies in the comics over the years, including the deadly Clayface. In the comic book, how did the original Clayface become a supervillain? The original Clayface. Was it A, he was hit by a radioactive tub of clay and acquired the modeling powers of clay? B, he was an insanely jealous actor who went mad with rage when one of his movies was remade without him? Or C, he ate a snail that had gone bad, giving him the superpower of oozing?
Ooh. It's B.
It's B. You're right.
Wow.
Now, did you know that because you're a big Batman aficionado and you know about this villain from the 1940s, or because you're like, if they remade one of my movies without me, I'd go mad and start killing people?
No, I just thought, I bet like whoever wrote that hated actors.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, he was an actor, and his first crimes were killing the people who were in the movie. So, yes, you did it. Carl, how did Lisa Kudrow do on our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Lisa, you had 2 correct answers, so you win for Laurie Hanshew.
Yay!
There you go. Lisa Kudrow is the executive producer of Who Do You Think You Are? Season 1 DVD is out now. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to talk to you.
Thank you. This was fun. Thank you.
It was fun to be with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In the 1980s, there was nobody like Pee Wee Herman, a strange man who kids loved because he seemed to be a strange kid himself.
The actor who created Pee Wee, Paul Rubens, joined us in March of 2011, along with panelists Tom Baudet, Faith Saley, and Mo Rocca.
I asked him about the massive Pee Wee Herman merchandising empire.
I actually talked the Purina company into doing my cereal, and it was going to be the first time that they ever allowed the checkerboard to be put on something that other than pet food.
Oh, really?
And so my cereal was going to be called Pee Wee Chow, and it was going to have the checkerboard on it. And the commercial for it was going to be a 1950s mom pouring a bowl and putting it on the floor and kids like crawling up and eating it.
And why didn't you go ahead with this? This would have been great.
Believe me, it wasn't my choice. I'm heartbroken about it, especially when I hear everybody laughing at it because I thought it was such a great commercial.
It's fabulous.
Paul, what would it have tasted like?
Oh, you know what? It tasted exactly like Trix, which was my favorite cereal when I was a kid.
Sure.
But it turned out kids didn't like it. They wanted a sweeter cereal.
Did you serve it to them on the floor, though, and encourage them to crawl up to it? Because any kid worth his salt would love that.
Yeah, that's what I said, too. But it turned out that I wasn't involved in the taste testing portion of it. And I doubt if that's what happened. I think they probably just, you know, get a bunch of kids and pour bowls of cereal, and they all must have just gone like, ugh, what the hell is this?
And you said that you had plans for a Pee-wee land, like a Pee-wee-themed theme park?
Yeah, you know, I used to, when I was doing interviews, I would always try to slip one non-factual thing in there. That's non-factual as in lie.
Yes.
And I would always just lie about one thing. And one time I was in the middle of an interview and I heard myself say, the guy said, "What are you doing next?" And I said, "I'm building Pee-wee Land." And it got printed, and then I started getting questions about it, and then I got an investor. Somebody contacted me who built malls and said they'd like to build Pee-wee Land, and I can't actually remember what happened, other than I know Pee-wee Land was never built. I remember that.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'd all be there right now, I would assume.
Well, at least I would be there probably with like a lot of like unsold tickets.
So I want to talk about Pee-wee's Playhouse. Pee-wee's Playhouse, which you started in the 80s and went into the 90s, was like the coolest, weirdest kids TV program that adults enjoyed. Did you ever say to yourself, or did anybody ever say to you, you know, the show needs to have a theme or give kids lessons or teach them things?
Well, we did have themes and we did have lessons and we did teach people things. I'm not sure if you were saying like, how come we didn't do any of that, or if you were.
Well, I mean, I one of the things I loved about it was there didn't seem to be an attempt to teach children anything other than they should just really enjoy themselves all day and then eat ice cream. That seemed to be the lesson that I am able to get from any episode.
I think you should go back and rewatch some of those.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, what
was the most important lesson?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's only 50 episodes. You could go and find that out yourself.
I want you to know, Paul, I own the whole run on DVD.
No, but there were lessons like on being polite, on being clean. And that was also kind of part of the joke also.
I mean, Sesame Street was already in play.
Yes.
When my show was on. And it did a lot of that. And I always wanted to have an educational show, but I felt like I wasn't going to compete with Sesame Street. I could do something different than Sesame Street and be way more relaxed and way more crazy. And I always felt like we had like a lot of stuff in there in every episode, or at least a few things that were kind of either the golden rule or a lesson.
When people come to you, because I know the people who watch the show with kids are now adults, they come to you. What do they say to you? Do they say, "Oh, your show taught me, and your show inspired me to"? What kind of responses do you get?
No, they don't say any of that.
Really? Really?
I guess that proves you were right. You know, my impression was most of the people who watched my show were so high that like they would.
That's the other theory.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why you don't remember.
Well, Paul Rubens, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Is there another Pee-wee in the house?
So you are perhaps the world's most famous Pee-wee, but you are far from the first or last Pee-wee. We're going to ask you about three other Pee-wees. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Paul Rubens playing for?
Paul is playing for Charles Spoljar of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
You ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right. First up, Pee-wee football. That's, of course, the generic name for the many youth football leagues out there, and there are many different kinds. For example, today's young aspiring football player could join which of these leagues? A, the Snoop Youth Football League. That's a league organized and sponsored by famed rapper Snoop Dogg. B, peace football, in which players are prevented from tackling, blocking, or even touching each other. Or C, video youth football, in which kids are divided into teams for organized tournaments of the Madden football video game.
What was B? I forgot. I didn't hear B.
B was peace football, in which the players are forbidden from contacting each other.
I'm going to go with A.
Snoop Youth Football League?
Yep.
You're right. Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg the rapper, he created the football league to benefit the kids in central L.A. Very good.
I know all about it. He's a really close friend of mine.
Is he really?
Not really.
Okay. I was going to believe that. I wanted you to know. Next up, Dave Pee-wee Herman. He's a mixed martial arts fighter named after, well, you, actually. He says he prepared, Pee-wee Herman did, for his early big fight against Mario Rinaldi. How? Was it A, he watched the original Rocky movie 16 times, B, he spent all day eating raw steaks and playing beer pong, or C, he punched bricks for 8 hours a day for a solid week?
You know, I almost think that that's probably the real answer, but I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, he watched the original Rocky 16 times for inspiration?
Yes.
I'm afraid it was B. He spent all day eating raw steaks and playing beer pong.
Ugh, what is wrong with him?
I don't know. He says he didn't mean for the steaks to be raw, but it was dark when he was grilling, and he just did it that way.
Well, I'm going to, as soon as I hang up the phone, I'm going to go watch Rocky 16.
There you are. Were you aware that there's a successful mixed martial arts fighter who goes by the name Pee-wee Herman?
Absolutely. I'm really good friends with him.
There you go. Well, this is very exciting. It comes down to the last question. There is a children's book character out there named Pee-wee. Is it A, Pee-wee the Kiwi? He teaches Australian kids about their neighbors to the east. B, Pee-wee the intestinal bacteria, who leads kids on tours of the magical human body. Or C, Pee-wee the worm, star of Pee-wee and the Magical Compost Heap.
Oh. Wow. Those all sound so enjoyable.
They do. They would be.
They all sound like they would scar young people, as a matter of fact. But I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, Pee-wee the Kiwi?
Yes.
It rhymes. I'll say that for it.
Are you helping me? Wow. C.
Yes, it's C. Thank you. Pee-wee the Worm, he's in several books, all of them about composting. Carl, how did Paul Rubens do in our quiz?
Paul had two correct answers, Peter, and so he wins for Charles Spoljar.
That's well done. Paul Rubens is the star of the Pee-wee Herman Show on Broadway. Paul Rubens, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was really fun.
Coming up, Xena the Warrior Princess does her battle cry, and then John Leguizamo tries to do it better. Support for NPR comes from Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. And Esurance, providing car insurance, shopping tools like real-time comparison quotes, and coverage counselors. Learn more at esurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, heirloom tomatoes, artisan bread, and a whole new way to think about food. We'll talk with Alice Waters, the matriarch of locally sourced sustainable cuisine. She inspired an entire generation of chefs and home cooks, and her new memoir documents 40 years at her restaurant, Chez Panisse. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers.
You know, I'm having all kinds of problems trying to trade in my old car.
Oh, dealer's still insisting that it run, huh?
Exactly. If it ran, I wouldn't have to trade it in.
Well, if your old car won't leave the driveway or won't leave it reliably,
donated to this station through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
You help pay for the programs you love, and you'll pocket a tax deduction.
Pretty good, huh? Here's how to do it.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org.
Support for our programming today is made possible in part by community support. Many companies will match gift to Nashville Public Radio made by employees and retirees. Ask your employer if they have a matching gift program, or find out more in the membership section of our website at WPLN.org. Coming up in about 20 minutes at 12 noon is The Splendid Table. Right now the time is 11:40. It's 84 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. You guys are great. Listen, what we're doing is we are listening back to our favorite TV and movie star interviews, and now we come to Lucy Lawless, who for many years was the star of the cult adventure TV show Xena Warrior Princess.
On our show that day in January of 2010, we had Kiri O'Connor, Paul Provenza, and Paula Poundstone with us as Peter asked Lucy if any of her fans were intimidated to meet her in person.
I don't know, but I think they like that.
They like.
I do. I used to get a lot of letters from, like, judges and lawyers who wanted me to stomp on them in my boots. So I understand. I hope my topic is that.
Really?
Like, shoe sex.
Where's the convention for that?
So I know you get this question a lot, but how much of Xena was you? Are you the kind of tough person who can, like, leap 5 feet over walls and beat up people left and right?
If provoked, I reckon I could.
If provoked, but okay, I understand. But we understand you did your own stunts. You were
not really. I mean, I did everything when the camera was on my face, but I had an amazing stunt woman called Zoe Bell. So she was really a good, at least a third, if not a half of Xena.
Right, but the war cry was yours, though, right?
All mine, baby.
Does being Xena or having been Xena ever become useful in real life?
You know. Only if I need to shut up a whining child in the back of a car.
Really?
Yeah.
Does the wardrobe?
All right. At this point,
does the Xena wardrobe ever come in handy?
I'm wearing it now.
You dress that way for all interviews. At this point, I think we need to hear it. So your kid's whining in the back of the car, and you turn around and you go. I'm scared.
Oh. And it makes. I hate to say it makes them cry, but it's the only ace card I have.
I totally understand. And Xena, we have to talk about this, had a certain rabid following among very different demographics. There were a lot of women who were very enthralled with your relationship with Gabrielle. Is that something?
Yes.
Is that something you guys intentionally played up?
It wasn't initially, but I now know for sure that it was not lost on the producers when they were putting the character together. And in fact, one of the producers, the EP, Liz Friedman, is a proud lesbian, and it was always part of her intention. So we didn't know it at the time, but...
I knew it.
But you knew it.
Some of us know it.
Some of us know it. Let's talk about the new show, Spartacus Blood and Sand. This is, of course, an updating, shall we say, of Spartacus, which was, of course, a famous movie with Kirk Douglas many years ago. This is slightly different. I don't remember as much nudity in the Kirk Douglas version as there is. The new show is great. I got to watch some of the episodes. It's a lot like the movie 300, though not so restrained and subtle. But you learned so much about ancient Rome in this show. For example, I did not know. I did not know.
That's like saying that you read it for the article.
I did. No, yeah. I'm just interested in the...
Yeah.
I wanted to get more details
of
the ancient
You've
gladiatorial
really
combat.
Tapped into the main purpose of the show.
You play the wife of the owner of the slave training school, the gladiator training school.
Yeah, I play this woman who's desperate to have a baby, and her husband's not doing it for her, so she's has this...
No, don't tell me what you're going to do. I want to be surprised. I can't imagine.
The gladiator comes into it.
Does he really?
Yeah, she's bossing the gladiators. She's abusing them. It's
I understand.
I play this. My character is worse than ever. My characters are badder than ever.
So you're playing. I mean, you're playing a villain, which is fun. You played a villainous Cylon in Battlestar Galactica, but you're like full. Are you like getting into full on evil at this point?
Well, appears to be. But my aim is to make you absolutely feel like you would do the same thing in my shoes.
I just want to point out, Boffing the Gladiator is a great name for a band.
That's
wow.
True.
Yeah.
Before we go on, I wanted to go back just a second and ask you about something we read about the very beginning of your career. Because if it's true, it's a great story. And what we read was that you got the job of Xena back when, because mm-hmm. the original woman cast in it got ill.
Yeah, I was the lucky local kid on the spot who got the gig.
So there were
grateful.
They were filming, I think it was The Legendary Journeys of Hercules, the other show, and Xena
right.
was going to be a character on that show, and so somebody right. else was cast and said, "Oh my God, she can't be here, she's sick or something else. Who can
right.
you woman over there, you can be Xena, step over here."
That's right. The lucky local kid, man. Just a classic story, and yeah, lucky me.
You're like Ruby Keeler on Broadway, but with a broadsword.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, and big boots.
And big boots. Boots, she said. Boots.
Boots.
She said boots.
Boots.
Lucy Lawless, we are thrilled to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this week we're calling...
We didn't have the chance to say thanks.
As the new year gets started, we wanted to take a moment and pay tribute to three under-recognized geniuses who recently left us. We're going to ask you three questions about great American innovators. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice and their home answering machine. Carl, who is actress Lucy Lawless playing for?
Lucy is playing for Rachel Huffine of Portland, Oregon.
All right, ready to do this?
Woo! Okay, Rach.
All right, first off, Al Bernadine. He was an unsung innovator who came up with many boons to modern life, but chief among them was what? A, the McDonald's quarter pounder, B, the quadruple-bladed disposable razor, or C, the bobblehead doll?
The bobblehead doll.
You want the bobblehead?
Yes, because I have one.
You have one.
I have one.
Thus, you're choosing the bus. You're choosing the bobblehead doll. No, it was
right.
a quarter pounder. He invented the quarter pounder, and he just died. He was a dean at McDonald's Hamburger University. He helped to contribute to the development of the Filet-O-Fish sandwich and the frozen French fry. But his masterpiece...
What a guy!
I know, but his masterpiece was the quarter pounder. He said,
yes,
quote,
indeed.
He said of his invention, quote, "I felt there was a void in our menu vis-a-vis the adult who wanted a higher ratio of meat to bun." That's how they talk at McDonald's. All right. Next question. Scientist Robert Rhines died in November. He was a Renaissance man. He developed radar technology for the Army. He composed scores for more than 10 Broadway and off-Broadway shows. But the one thing he was really passionate about the last 30 years of his life was what? A, perfecting a recipe for Long Island iced tea. B, finding the Loch Ness Monster. Or C, he was the world's foremost collector of Three's Company memorabilia.
Wow. That is random, man.
It is random, but one of those
things...
I think
there are a few bobbleheads in that collection.
One of these things was his obsession. Robert Rhines just died.
I'm going to go with the Long Island iced tea.
That he spent 30 years trying to perfect...
Say A again, but yeah.
He's 30 years trying to perfect the formula for the perfect Long Island iced tea.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it was the Loch Ness Monster. I
oh,
tried.
Now,
he said he saw something while sitting next to the lake in 1972. Spent 30 years using all his technological expertise to try to find it, including strapping cameras to dolphins. But all he ever got was a grainy picture of a flipper.
Don't you think it's rude to put a dolphin in fresh water?
They don't care.
Anyway.
Do they? Maybe that's why he didn't find it.
You see, what you don't know in the story is that over the course of that 30 years, he was drinking Long Island iced teas.
There you are. All right, let's see if we can get one right here. On December 15th, we lost Curtis Alina. He didn't invent something, but rather improved it. What was his great innovation? A, he put heads on Pez candy dispensers. B, he invented the mute button for remote controls. Or C, he came up with the silver reclining lady logo for truck mud flaps.
He's a god, anyway, whichever one he
Whichever one it was.
Any three of those is something to be proud of. Any one of those three.
B.
If you're going to go for B, he invented the mute
B.
button. That would be a boon
yes.
to mankind, wouldn't it? But I'm afraid it was A, he put the head on Pez
yes.
dispensers.
Wow.
Alina was the marketing manager for the very proper Austrian company that made Pez mints when he approved putting little heads on the dispensers to appeal to kids. And the rest is history. Carl, how did Lucy Lawless do in our quiz?
Lucy came up empty, Peter. No correct answers, no prize for Rachel Huffine.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. Lucy Lawless stars as Lucretia in the new series Spartacus Blood and Sand. It is an awful lot of fun, and Lucy, you are great in it. Lucy Lawless, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, darling.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter. See ya.
John Leguizamo is partly a that guy actor. You know, he's had so many different roles in so many different movies, from a thug to a drag queen, that you're always like, hey, it's that guy.
When he joined us in February of 2011 with panelists Charlie Pierce, Luke Burbank, and Roxanne Roberts, Peter asked him about the many different nationalities he's played.
So we've went through your filmography, and it's amazing. You've played a Colombian, which you are by birth, an Italian, a Frenchman, a Mexican, an Arabian genie, and a guy called Guess My Nationality Guy.
That was the character's name, Guess My Nationality. It was a spoof on racism.
I hope it was. Otherwise, it's pretty racist.
We're right on point.
Exactly. So, I mean, you've played all these different sort of characters and races. You've made fun of them. You've mocked them. Do you ever hear about it? Do you ever, like, get guff from people?
Yeah, you know, I did Carlito's Way, and I don't know, Italian people must have thought it was a documentary.
that's a movie with Al Pacino. It's in part about the mob in New York, and you played a pretty brutal character.
And I kill Pacino. I'm the only man in American cinema history to have shot Al Pacino dead in a movie. And everywhere I went, airports, whatever, they say, hey, you didn't have to kill him, you mook. He was going to get away. And I go, I'm sorry, it's a movie. It was written that way. I didn't really shoot him.
That's amazing. You're the only person ever to shoot Al Pacino, all the movies he's done, and no one's ever shot him?
Dead.
Oh,
I shot, but I hit the mark, and yeah, I was the first one to take him down.
Well, good for you. It's about time somebody got that guy. He was really bothering me.
All I shot him, I shot Harrison Ford, I shot Bruce Willis. I'm going to shoot all the A-list actors until they have to use them.
You have this gift for voices. You do a lot of actually voiceover work in cartoons and the Ice Age movies, Dora the Explorer once, which was great. And you do all these characters in your one-man shows. Have you always had a gift for that?
Yeah, I had to try not to get beat up in my neighborhood, so I was always trying to do all the different types of voices to get myself out of trouble. And
now,
I picked up all these voices, like Shmuel, and I was always trying to be funny so I wouldn't get hurt.
I'm sorry, because you hear this. You hear this from talented people such as yourself. Oh, I had to learn to perform because otherwise I'd get beat up in my tough neighborhood. And I'm trying to imagine this scenario in which the neighborhood toughs are about to lay a beating on you. And they're like, well, wait a minute. This guy can do a funny Jewish old man. Let's not. That just doesn't work for me. I mean,
they're like, I'm gonna beat you silly. And then you start going, come on, man, why would you hit me? Come on, listen to this. You buck down that quickly. You don't want to hurt this little man. And the people start laughing, and they won't hurt you as much. I'm just going to punch you in your head instead of punching you all over. How about that?
All right.
That? I'll do another voice. How can I reduce the sentence?
So is there a trick that you do when you come up with voices for the various kind of characters you approach? Are you one of those actors who really get into it, or is it all just spontaneous or improvisational?
No, I studied with Lee Strasberg for a day, and then he passed away. It wasn't my acting ability. It probably was.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
Lee Strasberg, probably the most famous acting teacher who ever lived. He was Pacino's acting teacher.
Yes.
And you studied with him. And you studied with him for one day?
He died that night.
You're going like, hi, Mr. B, I'm here, and he goes, great, and clutches his chest. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, he said, get out of my class, you talentless schmuck. But then he died later that night.
Wow. So, okay, so you had one day of training, but then what did you do?
But then I stayed in the class and studied with the other living teachers.
Probably better for your career. So, for example, when you did the Ice Age movies, you carefully studied sloths. For example.
I did. I mean, it didn't help, but it actually did help.
Really? So you're playing this animated talking sloth, and you went and you looked at actual sloths?
I got footage from the Discovery Channel on sloths.
Yeah.
And I watched the footage, and they said that they store their food in their cheek pouches. Because I came up with 50 voices for the guy. I was trying southern voice, I was trying cowboy. I was trying, okay. And then I put food in my mouth, and I was like walking around, how am I going to come up with this voice? What am I going to do with this? Oh, snap. This is it. And I called the director. I said, guess who this is?
Well,
Mike Tyson eating Doritos.
Wait. So
when you did the movie, did you have food in your mouth?
I did the first few takes, but then I got it all over the microphone and everything, so I learned how to do it without that.
I know, but that's acting. That difference between doing it with the food and not is acting. Well, John Leguizamo, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
This game comes with a shard of brittle gum.
What does that mean?
We're talking about baseball cards. Baseball cards go back a long way, but they were invented in their modern form exactly 60 years ago by the Topps Company. So to start off spring training, we're going to ask you a few questions about baseball cards. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Are you ready to play?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't collected them in years, but yeah.
All right. Carl, who is John Leguizamo playing for?
John is playing for Trish Kelly of Chicago.
All right. Here's your first question. The 1956 card showing Hank Aaron sliding into a base in action is quite valuable to collectors. Why? Is it because A, they used a photo of a white player and just colored it in? B, it's actually Willie Mays? Or C, Hank broke his toe while posing for that picture and missed 20 games?
It can't be A, that they colored a white guy. Or it is. Life was really crazy back then, wasn't it? I bet you it is some kind of random white guy that they colorized in. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. They just sort of colorized the white guy. It was Willie Mays.
Oh, man, I was so close.
You were.
A and the answer was B.
Yeah. You were like one away. It was really close.
I was one away.
How the Topps Company mistook one of the relatively few African-American stars in baseball at the time for another remains
crazy.
Unexplained. How could that happen? All right, you still have two chances. This question is about Braves infielder Glenn Hubbard. He had an unusual card in 1984. Why was it so unusual? A, he is shirtless in the photo. B, he's holding a python. Or C, in his pocket, you can see a bottle of amphetamines.
Oh, man, this could get me into a lot of trouble.
That would be different.
Yeah, that would be a different situation. It can't be amphetamines. No, that can't be the one.
Probably not.
No, and the snake, no one's going to put a baseball player with a snake on a baseball card. So it's got to be that he was shirtless. You must have thought he was a stud.
You thought he was shirtless?
Yeah.
Nah, he was holding a python. We look into
I knew it.
I knew it. You knew it. We don't know why he was holding a python. He likes pythons.
That's the craziest move for a ball player.
It is. It was pretty cool. Maybe he was high on amphetamines. We don't know. All right, last question. Let's see if we can get this one. In 1989, relief pitcher Paul Gibson's card was recalled and airbrushed after it was released because fans noticed what about the original picture? A, there was a player in the background grabbing his crotch. B, Gibson was holding the ball with only his middle finger. Or C, there is a naked woman reflected in his sunglasses.
Wow, that's a good photo shoot.
Isn't it, though? You have to make him
naked
smile somehow.
Naked woman in his eyes. That can't be it. What was A again?
A was there's a player in the background grabbing his crotch.
That's probably more likely. I mean, the ball players, you know, always grabbing their crotches.
Is that your choice?
Yeah.
You're right. That's exactly what happened. For the reason you say. It was an action shot taken during a game, and the player behind him on second base is doing what baseball players do. He's grabbing his crotch. Carl, how did John Leguizamo do in our quiz?
Well, John needed at least two correct answers to win for Trish Kelly, but he had just one correct answer.
Oh, man.
It's fodder. It's fodder for your resentment and anger. You'll make it art, man.
I'm feeling mighty resentful.
It's good.
Not as resentful as Trish is.
Yeah. John Leguizamo, thank you so much for joining us in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That does it for our Best of Not My Job show. Support for NPR comes from Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. Progressive Insurance and Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the thriving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. And to the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Emily Ecton. Our technical directors are Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle. Thanks also to all our panelists. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
With the hottest days of summer here, sometimes it may seem necessary to go to extremes when it comes to decreasing energy consumption. NES suggests a few simple ways to reduce energy use. Turn off unneeded lights, raise the thermostat slightly, or adjust the water heater to 120 degrees. NES customers don't have to go to extremes to reduce energy consumption. Learn more about simple ways to cut down energy use at nespower.com.
Nashville weather this afternoon, scattered showers and thunderstorms with partly sunny skies, the high near 90 degrees. Right now, it's 85 degrees in Nashville under mostly cloudy skies, and the time is 12 noon.